This is Long Gospel. Thank you for joining us. In this segment, we'll discuss polygamous sects in Mormonism and how so many of them seem to be going on trial recently for practicing these acts of pedophilia, this child marriage. And there may or may not be some kind of a link to Mormonism in that. I'm Roland Lettner. Tom Baker's away from the program today.
And I'm Pastor Matt Roglin, filling in for Tom. Our phone lines are open. You may call in if you have a question or a comment. Our numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727.
Now, in the next segment coming up at 5:30, we have a volume of Luther's works. Matt will explain that a little bit more at the bottom of our hour here. But we'll be giving that away for a caller during our open line segment from 5:30 to about 5:45. But joining us now is Art Vanek. Art is the co-author of the CPH publication, Who Really Wrote the Book of Mormon, The Spalding Enigma. Sounds like a good mystery read. And actually, it kind of is a mystery story, as Art has explained before. Welcome back, Art. It's good to talk with you again.
Well, thanks for having me on your show again.
So it's hard enough dealing with the whole Mormonism polygamy thing and trying to get that understood as far as why they don't practice it now. Was it ever a practice of the church, a doctrinal kind of thing? But why in the world does it appear that all of these breakaway Mormon sects have this really odd practice of child marriage? What's that all about?
Well, I think it may go all the way back to Joseph Smith, who I believe, among other people, went after Sidney Rigdon's teenage daughter, and Sidney Rigdon was one of the early leaders of the church, and that attempt by Joseph Smith pretty much set Sidney Rigdon against the church, and I believe he left not too long after that, although after Joseph Smith was murdered by the mob in Carthage, Illinois, he did come back in order to try to become the head of the church and, I guess, steer it along his theological presets. But Brigham Young, as you know, beat him out of it, and then Sidney Rigdon gradually faded into oblivion with his own sect of Mormonism for a while called the Rigdonites, I believe, and that the numbers dwindled over the years and basically disappeared. But polygamy itself has a very interesting history in Mormonism. It was started in secret by Joseph Smith and a couple of others, and it was going for nearly, I believe, 15 years before it finally was recognized as some sort of official practice within the church. And even before Joseph Smith passed away, there were people within Mormonism who did not agree with polygamy. And once Brigham Young took over control of the Mormons in 1844 or so, there was a group that separated from them, and they called themselves the Reorganized Latter-day Saints. And today they are now known as the Community of Christ. And what's very interesting about those people is that every one of their presidents, leaders, whatever you want to call them, up until the current one, were all direct descendants of Joseph Smith. The current leader of the Community of Christ used to be their chief archivist, and he started a five-year transition where they gradually are in the process of getting rid of the Book of Mormon and have actually been seeking dialogue with mainstream Christian sects with the goal of eventually turning into a mainstream Christian religion, which is just extremely interesting to me, because ever since the Reorganized Latter-day Saints have been in existence, all of their clergy, or whatever you want to call them, have all gone through Methodist seminaries. So it's like they were never really willing to to go wholeheartedly into Mormonism. They always had that, you know, there was that part of them that wanted to know the real Jesus, you know, real Christianity. But as polygamy took over more and more, and really under Brigham Young probably hit its heyday, much of the Latter-day Saints, especially in Utah, were polygamous families. But then as the 19th century dragged on, Utah wanted to become a state because of the obvious benefits of being part of the United States. But at the same time, they knew that the only way that Utah would become a state is if they got rid of polygamy. And there was quite a bit of debate back and forth, but finally I believe it was Wilford Woodruff said in 1890, sorry, polygamy is no more. That was the official stand, but polygamy has gone on, albeit underground, ever since then. And over the years, a number of different polygamous groups have formed. And the FLDS, made famous or infamous, if you will, by Warren Jeffs a few years ago when he became the number one wanted man on the FBI list, they are quite possibly the most powerful. They're very rich. They have a number of safe houses or whatever you, enclaves, compounds, whatever you want to call them. And, gosh, it's polygamy, Mormon polygamy, fundamentalist Mormon polygamy is such a tangled web of different things. It's hard to separate out any one little strand of it and make sense of it.
Well, why are these sects, like the Warren Jeffs bunch, into this child marriage business? What is that's, I think, what a lot of people have a hard time understanding.
You know, it's a hard question to answer. I mean, I've been looking for a real clearly defined reason, and I can't really come up with one other than they liken it back to biblical times where sometimes women got married at a very young age, and so they kind of like cherry-pick different things in order to justify their practices.
Well, you've talked before about there's connections between Islam and Mormonism.
Correct.
And the way their doctrine is set up. Now, we've all heard the story about Muhammad having a bride, some say 10, some say 12,
mm-hmm.
of that sort of thing. And I wondered if there was some connection, since there's some theological connection between what Mormons believe and practice and Islam, to this sort of child marriage business.
You know, I don't really think there is as far as the early marriage. I think it's more a corruption of interpretation from different parts of the Bible, frankly. And, you know, going back to that HBO's Big Love thing, that was, you know, if you throw away the Peyton Place treatment of the whole thing, it very accurately depicted the workings of these different polygamous compounds where you have basically a hierarchy. You've got this one guy who's kind of like the supreme leader of everything, and then a council who is right underneath him, and then you have the internal security and all that other kind of stuff. And these different groups actually go head-to-head sometimes. They will fight over property, territory, sometimes even wives. And right along with the marriage to these young girls who are usually teenagers, anywhere from, I guess, about 14 years up or 13, they also tend to be very harsh toward teenage boys. And if they think a teenage boy is a bit of a threat in one of these polygamous compounds, many times they will either drive them out or in some cases, I guess there have actually been murders of teenage boys whom the elders believed were going to be a threat to these older men and their harems. And there are documented cases of child labor gangs that are run by these polygamous compounds, and they deliberately send them out to work on heavy construction, sometimes working large construction machinery like road graders and all kinds of different things, hoping that, I guess, in the process, some of these kids will have industrial accidents and kill themselves. I mean, it's just, the whole thing is just such a twisted mess that it's hard to find a rhyme or reason. I think the reason that a lot of these polygamous compounds exist today, more than for the strange sexual practices, it's some kind of weird lust for power or something. It's really bizarre, and I think they are coming into the news more because they see the government getting more lenient toward, shall we call them, alternative lifestyles, putting it mildly. And so they're coming out, and the government isn't doing anything, whether it's local or county or state government or in some cases federal government. About the only time that law enforcement steps in nowadays is if some kind of proven child abuse or murder or something like that occurs, to where they just can't cover it up anymore, and they've got to go after these people and prosecute them.
You know, trying to tie our last segment in here, we talked last segment with Timothy Furnish, and he was talking about Islam and how it's not really fair to call somebody who does something violent an extremist, because there can be a literal interpretation of the Quran that would lead somebody to do something like this.
Oh, definitely.
And I'm curious as to, with this polygamy and pedophilia, is you mentioned some ties to the Bible, where people were marrying young or whatever. But is there anything in the Book of Mormon or an interpretation of the specific interpretation of the Bible where they get this from, or is this just...
Well, that's where it is really interesting, because if you look at the Book of Mormon, it definitely speaks out against polygamy.
Really? Wow.
The Book of Mormon, its religious areas, for lack of a better descriptor, oftentimes are much, much closer to Orthodox Christianity than any kind of aberrant theology. You get the bizarre religious teachings and pronouncements in Doctrine and Covenants, Pearl of Great Price, and Journal and Discourses. That's where all the weird stuff comes in. And Doctrine and Covenants, in particular, many times they will use that when it suits their purposes to get around the Book of Mormon actually speaking out against something. Because, see, they have a revelatory system where each new prophet can come in and can say... Can totally change the way the church had been going up till that point. I've used the ridiculous example before, where let's say the current prophet of the LDS, Monson, I think is his last name, he could come out on the radio today and he says, "I have the testimony from God. The sky is now brown." And the true faithful Mormons would, from now on, say, you know, we have the testimony, the sky is brown, regardless of, you know, the fact that it's blue, but...
Well, unless they live in Los Angeles.
Yeah, well, yeah, then they might say, but it's been that way for a long time. All right, you wise guy. Hey, I live in Manhattan Beach. The sky is still blue here, except on Santa Ana condition days. But, you know, it's just incredible how they will twist and turn things, because there are even pronouncements in Doctrine and Covenant against polygamy. But then there are other places where it talks about it being okay. But it's a linear thing. And so as the revelations continue to come out of the prophets' mouths, God continues to change his mind, which I find interesting and perplexing at the same time. Because I have always come to believe that God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. But the Mormon God can apparently change his mind, and does, and has hundreds or thousands of times. And then when you get into these different splinter groups, like the FLDS, or the Apostolic United Brethren, or True and Living Church of Jesus Christ of Saints of the Last Days, or I think there is something like 35 different active Mormon and fundamentalist sects going on today. And each one of them may or may not have his own prophet, seer, and revelator, who is, you know, supposedly the one and only conduit for God, and yet they give all these different revelations about things.
When I was in high school, I was in a music group that toured around the country, and we would stop at different places depending on where we were. And one year we stopped in Independence, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And is that the same group that you're referring to, the reorganized Latter-day Saints that are now calling themselves the... they're the ones that are now calling themselves the Church of Christ or something?
Community of Christ.
Community of Christ, okay.
Yes.
And then,
but it's interesting, if I could just interject for a second.
Ahead.
When they started on that five-year transition or transformation, there was a huge chunk of them that simply could not and would not give up the Book of Mormon, and they left. And those people, to this day, still call themselves RLDS.
Okay.
They refuse to accept the Community of Christ label.
So we're just creating more smaller groups, I guess.
That's it.
The next year, we actually toured through Utah and got to tour the in Salt Lake City.
Uh-huh.
And I remember the tour guide saying, you know, something along the lines of, the Mormon Church is the only church that has never changed throughout all the years. And I marveled at that. You know, I'm thinking, okay, you now have even African American, I guess, equivalents of ministers. Whereas you used to not have that. You used to say polygamy was okay. Now you say, at least on the outside, that it's not okay. And I just thought, boy, this is really interesting that they would actually make a statement like that.
A lot of changes for a church that never changes, right?
That's right. The question I have about the reorganized church, the one that has changed to the Community of Christ, you mentioned that they've gone away from the Book of Mormon, but then you also mentioned that the Book of Mormon was the one that spoke out against, say, polygamy and other things, and that perhaps the other documents and books were the ones used that said some other things. Are they going away from those books as well?
Yes. There seems to be some kind of a timetable, if you will. And I think the leader of the church, And it's interesting, too, because the previous RLDS leaders usually referred to themselves as prophet. But this guy made a point of saying, do not call me the prophet. You call me the president of the church. So he's bringing a completely different outlook. And like I said, they lost, I think it was upwards of 50,000 people or something like that. In fact, it might have been well over 100,000. And it's interesting because the way I found out about the people who left, a caller called up. I was on your station Labor Day weekend of 2005. In fact, one of my co-authors, Wayne Cowdery, was on the air with me. And one of these people called up on the show. And it was really interesting. And I think Todd Wilkin dealt with him rather abruptly. But this guy called up, and I said, don't you mean your Community of Christ? And he says, no, I am RLDS. I did not subscribe to the changes. So, like I said, they are trying to move toward mainstream Christianity. And I have a friend out in Hawaii who is in touch with the Community of Christ leadership, and I put him in touch with some Lutheran ministers to see if some sort of dialogue could be started. So I don't know how far that's progressed, but
Art, there was a story on ChristianPost.com last week sometime about it, more so now than ever, the Mormon Church is looking to make interfaith connections with other Christian groups. Now, I'm wondering, in your opinion, is that because they're looking to change our mind, or they're actually trying to be like this other group?
Well, there's a bit of them trying to pass themselves off as a mainstream Christian religion. I think I may have sent you some information over the last several months. There's a Mormon apologist by the name of Robert Millett, I believe his name is. No, his last name is Millett. I'm just not sure about the first name. This guy is a pro, and he is smooth. And he has engaged in several dialogues or attempts at dialogue with Dr. Mouw, M-O-U-W, who is the president of Fuller Theological Seminary. And as far as I'm concerned, Dr. Mouw, I think, is pretty much trying to sell out Christianity in his attempt at dialoguing with this Mormon, Millett, who has absolutely no intent whatsoever.
It's a good place to maybe break that. No intent to really?
Leave Mormonism.
Hmm. Art Vanek, thank you so much. I'm sorry we have to cut you short, but
No problem.
When the engineer points at you, you don't have much of a choice. The guy's got a gun. You got to do what he says.
Okay.
What's your blog site? Let's give that out because people always want to know more about what you have to say.
It is artsenigma.blogspot.com, I believe. I think I have a link to it at my website, which is www.solomonspalding.info, I-N-F-O.
solomonspalding.info. Sure. Art, thanks so much. CPH still carries the book, Who Really Wrote the Book of Mormon. It does read, like I said, sort of like a mystery novel, because it is kind of a mystery how this group called the Mormons came to be. God bless you, my friend. Enjoy your worship this weekend, and we will talk again very soon. Up next, open lines, and we're going to give away a volume of Luther's work, so you be ready to call in. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson, host of Sunday Morning Moments of Assurance. The psalmist once wrote these very encouraging words. The Lord upholds all who fall and raises all who are bowed down. Well, if you feel in any way bowed down today, go to the Lord through His holy word. He's the one who will get you up again. words, and music to get you going again coming up this Sunday at 9:15 a.m. on Moments of Assurance, KFUO Radio.
Next time on Lamplighter Theater.
I just go and knock on the door and greet them. Those biscuits do smell delicious.
I can't.
Charlie.
Shh. They're over here.
Come out and show yourself.
I know my family is no longer living where they used to.
Does this mean
you kept my letters from my family?
We've received word that the Scarlet Fever has come to the house. It would not be wise to visit now.
Lamplighter Theater.
Saturday mornings at 11 on KFUO Radio.
The Big Bang, it's on its way.
Answers with Ken Ham, one of the most in-demand Christian speakers in North America.
Does the Bible speak of a Big Bang that brought the universe into existence, as some people teach? See, most evolutionists believe in the Big Bang. They insist that billions of years ago, matter exploded, and as a result, the universe developed by chance random processes. Eventually, the sun formed, then a very hot earth. But the Bible teaches God made the earth first before the sun. Also, the earth was covered with water when it was first formed. It wasn't a hot molten blob. So all of this is in great conflict with the Big Bang idea. There's no way a Christian can accept the Big Bang and add it to Genesis. Now, the Bible does talk about a certain kind of Big Bang, though. In the book of 2 Peter, we're told that there's a time in the future when God will judge this earth with fire, when the elements will melt with fervent heat, and there'll be a big noise. The Big Bang hasn't happened. It's on its way.
Now, while you can't find the Big Bang in Genesis chapter 1, you will find the marvelous account of the creation of the first two humans. Our current issue of Answers Magazine praises our Creator for the wonderful design we see in the human body. For some great reading, call to receive a sample copy of Answers Magazine. Toll free at 1-888-89-ANSWERS. Make a donation of any amount and we'll send you the magazine in the mail. That's 888-89-ANSWERS.
Hello, this is Jane Wilkie. On behalf of Lutheran Senior Services, I would like to congratulate AM 850 KFUO on 85 years of proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ. You know, many of our residents who live at all of our communities, including Breeze Park in St. Charles, Hidden Lake in North County, Richmond Terrace in Richmond Heights, Meridian Village in Glen Carbon, Laclede Groves in Webster Groves, and Merrimack West in West County are all faithful listeners of AM 850 KFUO. We are celebrating our own 150th anniversary, and we realize that it's important to pass on the legacy of faith to the next generation. Longevity, commitment, faith, and stability all play an important role in living out our own mission, and we know that that is also true for you. In the words of the Christian songwriter and singer Steve Green, may those who come behind us find us faithful. Thank you, KFUO, for being faithful in 85 years of proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ.
It's a long-standing tradition at KFUO Radio. Every Sunday morning, we carry two live worship broadcasts from area churches. At 8 o'clock, we carry the service from Trinity Lutheran Church in Edwardsville. The Reverend Marty Springer is the pastor. Then at 10:45, we broadcast our second service, this time from Timothy Lutheran Church in St. Louis, where the Reverend Ron Rawl is the pastor. If it serves you well, listen to one or both of our Sunday morning worship broadcasts on KFUO Radio. We are where you are.
This is Long Gospel. Thank you again for being with us this afternoon. In this segment, Open Mic Friday. Since Tom isn't here, it's only fair that we keep the spirit of Open Mic Friday alive, even though we had some guests today. And we thank Tim Furnish and Art Vanek for their contributions to our discussions. Also, Matt Roglin, who's here alongside, filling in for Tom as the co-host today. Thanks for coming in and joining.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
You're getting into the radio game pretty well.
Yeah. It's fun.
the bug.
I tried to run away from it as fast as I could. I couldn't do it after Diane joined our church, though. Can't hide very well.
Why don't you give out the phone numbers for folks? Now, here's what we've got. We've got a copy of Luther's Works. Matt will describe it in just a moment. But let's give out the phone numbers. And, Matt, you pick a caller. What number caller you think should get this?
All right. Our numbers are 505-7850 if you're in Metro St. Louis, or if you're calling from outside there, you're listening online or with your smartphone, 1-800-730-2727. And I got to say, I'm still looking forward to when we get to the MP3 live stream of the KFUO so I can get it on my phone, or that my phone company comes up with a way to
just
get the WMA files.
Just don't buy these North Korean knockoff, cell phones, and you'll be fine.
Oh.
get a real one, and it'll work.
I got a real phone.
So what is this Luther's Works volume?
This Luther's Works volume is one of the new ones. It is...
Did you pick a number, by the way? I'm sorry.
I didn't pick a number. I was going to say number four.
Caller number four, 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. If you got a question,
I don't know where I came up with that number.
That's okay.
But, whatever. But anyway, this Luther's Works, actually a copy of this exact volume appeared on my table recently, and I was wondering where that came from. I thought maybe somebody had taken off one of them off my bookshelf. But then I saw the number. It's volume 69, back in the 1950s, I believe. They had a, 1955, the general editorship of Yaroslav Pelikan and Helmut Lehman.
Well, those are two big names.
Yeah,
in Luther's
they
theology.
Translated a bunch of them, the American edition, and CPH, Concordia Publishing House, did the first 30, and the next 20 or 30 or so were done by Augsburg Fortress. This is, again, by CPH. It is Sermons on the Gospel of St. John, chapters 17 through 20.
Now, if you're into long gospel, say like a Tom Baker is into long gospel, is this where you can enrich your knowledge of the proper distinction between long gospel?
Well, sure. It's another opportunity to read theology from, Dr. Luther. And this is recently translated, and so if somebody's got, the old Luther's Works and wants to add to it, they can call in. Do we have a fourth caller? Is that what I'm...
Buzz is back there working diligently. I'd say go ahead and keep calling, because I don't know what number Buzz is up to. I've been...
Okay, all right.
From where I'm sitting, I can't see the telephone directly, so 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. If you're the one who receives this gift, and I must mention, this is a gift from Concordia Publishing House. They sent us a box of stuff with all kinds of good things in it, thanks to Rosemary at Concordia Publishing House. You can find all of their good things at cph.org. Luther's Works, this is volume what? I can't read upside down.
Volume 69.
Which is the
Sermons on the Gospel of St. John.
That's wow.
One of the reasons why that copy of it showed up on my table, because one of my members decided that we're studying John right now on Sunday morning and thought, oh, pastor should have this. So
there you go. So if you've got a question or a comment, if you're not interested, or if you just happen to be someone that wants to ask Pastor Roglin a question, it is Open Mic Friday. We have a few moments together. I know you wanted to sort of follow up. When we were talking with Tim Furnish, we had a caller who asked the question about literal interpretations and was talking about the rich young ruler, and you wanted to sort of dive in, but it was at the last moment. Go ahead and clarify that point.
When the rich young ruler came to Jesus and he said, what must I do to inherit the kingdom of God?
Okay, already a red flag raising when I hear, what do I do? Yeah.
And, of course, we know that there's nothing that we can do. It's interesting that he used the word inherit, because you don't usually do anything to inherit something either. But he asked that, and Jesus says, well, you want to do something? Follow all the Ten Commandments. And he says, well, I followed them all. And Jesus says, okay, sell all you have. Reminding that rich young ruler of the one thing that was stopping him from totally and completely following the Lord. It was not to tell us all to sell all that we have, but that, Christ and our relationship with him is the most important thing. So it wasn't But it could be taken literally by some, I would assume. But that wasn't the intention of what he was saying. Anyway, it looks like we have something here.
All right, as I put on my eyes, here we go. It is Ron Prigg from Temecula, California.
Yep.
Wow.
Now, look at that. Ron, listening online, no doubt. Thank you so much. Thank you for calling in, because it gives me the opportunity to talk about this important phrase that we use. We are where you are. We're ever so glad that you're out there in California listening to us. And www.kfuo.org, kfuo.org, you can stream all the programming, not just while we're live during the regular broadcast day, but the program continues on, online streaming at that site.
I'm just wondering if this is a pastor, because I believe there was a classmate of mine by the name of Ron Prigge at the seminary.
Well, that would explain why you called it Prigge. You called him Prigge, as I called him.
Yeah, when I saw that, I said, yeah, that was how he, I think his first name was Ron, and he was in my class at seminary, so.
Well, I will take care of getting this to you. Normally, we would say, come by the station and pick it up, but I think because you're a good listener way out in California, I'll make it a point to get this out to you in the mail this week.
Great.
So, did you finish your point then about the rich young?
Yeah, I do believe I did.
The literal interpretation. This is where people go off the rails a little bit. I think maybe, like I said to Tim, the better example is if you look at the Sermon on the Mount and pluck out your eye or cut off your hand if it offends you. If you were a literalist, you would literally do that. And we'd have a lot of one-eyed, one-armed Christians walking around because they were literally following the words. And we all know that Christ did not literally mean cut off your hand, pull out your eye, or did he?
No, he was not. He was not talking about that literally. Tying all of what we talked about today together, I think we see that we have atheists that are trying to get us to give up on our faith. We have Muslims who are taking their belief literally to the point of being labeled it by some as extremist, but perhaps that's not a fair or even a correct kind of statement to talk about them. And then we have Mormons who actually go against their main book of doctrine and pursue some things, but have come into the highlight, or into the limelight, I guess, if you will, because of relaxed understandings of different preferences and those kinds of things, all going back to what it is that we believe as Christians. I mention this friend of mine on Facebook a lot, but he kind of helps me tie these things together, because he likes to talk about Christian extremists. And I'm looking forward to having and hearing Tom Baker come back and discuss the center of Christianity.
Yeah, where's it moving to these days? Where is the center of Christianity? And also, the Vatican's talking about, how does it affect our theology if we discover little green men out in space somewhere? We'll talk about that on Monday when Tom Baker returns, along with me, Roland Lettner, on Law and Gospel. Thank you so much, Pastor Rogan. We appreciate you being here. God bless.
Thank you.
Listen to Law and Gospel with Tom Baker and Roland Lettner, Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. on KFUO Radio. You can write Pastor Tom at KFUO Radio, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105, or at this email address, lawgospel@lawgospel.com.